Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Face to Die For by Andrea Kane. Narrated by Hilary Huber. Prologue. Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, New York, March 1990. Anthony slid behind the wheel of his Ford Taurus and started it up, cranking up the heat the instant the engine turned over. It was friggin' freezing outside. Even in the 5 minutes it had taken him to walk the babysitter to her front door, the temperature outside felt like it had dropped 10 degrees, and his car was an icebox. Shivering, he zipped his parka up as far as it would go and gripped the steering wheel, maneuvering the car away from the curb. He'd finally shared an evening out with his wife. It should have eased the knot in his gut. After all, it had been the first time that he and Carla had left their infants with a sitter since the babies had been born a month ago. And Judy was the perfect babysitter, a good girl from a good family, one who studied rather than doing drugs and screwing horny guys. Still, dinner had been strained. Anthony had only picked at his manicotti, his favorite dish at Ramos. His mind was far away, and acid kept building up in his stomach. Carla couldn't stop worrying and talking about the babies. She'd checked her watch 12 times, intermittently giving Anthony puzzled looks and asking if he was okay. Each time she asked, he'd assure her that he was fine, just exhausted from work and midnight feedings. As if to contradict his words, some new waiter had dropped a tray of dishes on the floor, and Anthony had nearly jumped out of his skin at the crash. Carla rose, asking him to order her another drink and to get one for himself to calm his nerves. Giving in to her new mother concerns, she went to the payphone in the back to call Judy for an update. "So far, so good," Judy had reported. But that didn't totally erase Carla's fretting. She tried her best to be bright and chatty, but the truth was that, at this point, she was ready to go. She'd fiddled with her napkin and sipped at her drink, making small talk and glancing at the door. Getting the hell out of there had worked for Anthony. He was more than ready to be home with his family and not out in the open. He'd use his fatigue as an excuse. He had to continue keeping the inevitable from Carla until he had no choice but to tell her. He'd soften the blow as best he could, but the important thing was that his family would be protected at all costs. Now, the heat in his car roared to life, warming his body, but doing nothing to extinguish his inner chill. He knew the rules. No transgression went unpunished. Why the hell had he been so preoccupied with new fatherhood that he'd forgotten to make his collections from the designated list of construction foremen these past 2 weeks? That in itself was a huge black mark against him, one he'd be punished for. But the outcome of his stupidity opened the door to a far more lethal punishment. Someone else had been sent to handle his route and his money. They would have collected and turned over twice the amount he'd been handing over, and that meant he'd better be able to explain the discrepancy, assuming he'd even be asked before he was killed. Please, God, let him have that chance. He was just on the verge of buying that gas station he'd been single-mindedly building his bank account for, just about to provide for his family's future. And now this. With shaking hands, Anthony switched on the radio, gritting his teeth as Madonna's voice blasted off the windows, followed by Michael Jackson's. He turned the dial until finally the soothing tones of Frank Sinatra's voice filled the car. Sinatra. Perfect. The chairman of the board's crooning was just the right medicine to ease his clawing anxiety. He reached his street and turned down the line of small brick row houses, all identical in their flat lines, gated fronts, and tiny gardens. There was a certain comfort and peace about the sameness of it all. It made it feel like a neighborhood. Would he ever feel that sense of comfort and peace again? He pulled into his narrow driveway and spotted Carla standing at the front door with a broad smile, giving him a thumbs up. That meant the infants had come through their first babysitting experience with flying colors. He forced himself to smile back, but even as he did, his gaze swept the area around the house to see if he was alone. It appeared so. Quickly, he turned off the car and then made the frigid dash to his house. He couldn't shut and lock the door behind him fast enough. The soothing warmth from the heating system enveloped him when he stepped inside, comfort in yet another form. He was home. Carla and the babies were safe, and for the moment, so was he. With a wave of relief, however temporary, he let the tension in his body ease. He shrugged out of his jacket and hung it on the coat rack. "You look happy," he teased Carla. "What's the final report?" Carla's eyes twinkled. They were perfect. Judy said they'd only woken up once for their bottles and a diaper change. Now they're sleeping like little angels. Good. Anthony looped an arm around his wife's shoulders and led her toward the living room. "How about a nightcap before bed to celebrate the success of our first night out?"
"That sounds wonderful."
Carla walked beside him, making a left into their comfortable living room. They'd barely taken half a dozen steps when a tall, masked man dressed in black rose from behind the large armchair, his .22-caliber pistol raised. "Hello, Anthony." Anthony knew that voice only too well, and it elicited the chilling knowledge that there was no way out. No threats, just death. "Welcome home." The man's finger tightened around the trigger.
"No!"
Carla screamed. She threw herself in front of her husband just as the pistol fired. The bullet pierced her skull, and with a shattering cry, she crumpled to the floor.
"Carla! No! Carla!"
Anthony shouted. He dropped to his knees beside his wife's lifeless body, grabbing her into his arms and openly weeping.
"God, forgive me! Oh, God, forgive me!"
He looked up in dazed anguish, just as a second shot was fired. The bullet struck Anthony between the eyes. His head jerked backward, and he fell over his wife, dead. Upstairs, the babies started to cry. The gunman shoved his pistol back in his waistband. He knew the mob code like he knew his own name. No women, no children. Omerta. A woman lay dead before him, the taunting evidence of a fuck-up. He took the steps two at a time. Tucked in their cribs, the babies were still crying as their parents' killer entered the nursery and hovered over them. Not even the nightlight could eradicate the darkness. 1. Casey Woods' apartment, 4th floor, Forensic Instincts Brownstone, Tribeca, New York City, May 2017. The sun had long since made its bright yellow ascent, and the city streets were filled with commuters making their way to work. On the sidewalks, people hurried along, some in business attire talking on their cell phones, and some in athletic gear, striding to the beat of the music they were listening to on their iPhones. Downstairs, in the professional hub of the Brownstone, Forensic Instincts was gearing up for another busy day. One by one, the team arrived, punching the key code into the Hirsch pad that allowed them entry. Inside, they each went to their workspace, gathered up the necessary materials, and headed to the first floor meeting room, the small, cozy space reserved for first-time interviews and subsequent meetings that required putting their clients at ease. FBI Supervisory Special Agent Kyle "Hutch" Hutchinson heard the lower-level activity loud and clear. He shifted onto his side in Casey's bed, wishing the workday would take a hiatus. But he also knew Casey would kill him if she were late to an appointment, any appointment, but most specifically, a new client interview.
"Sweetheart, it's time to wake up," he said.
His voice ruffled Casey's mane of red hair, now tousled and spread out across the pillows. She mumbled an unintelligible protest and snuggled back under the covers. A corner of Hutch's mouth lifted.
"Come on, Case.
He gave her a gentle shake. Casey swatted his hand away. He'd kept her awake half the night, and her muscles were feeling it.
Tired, she murmured. Need sleep.
A sated chuckle. I'm sure you do. But I have to get to the FBI field office, and you have a new client meeting in 45 minutes. That did the trick. Casey's eyes snapped open, and she practically leapt out of bed. Damn it, she said. What happened to the alarm? Propping himself on one elbow, Hutch gave her his slow, sexy grin. I might have accidentally turned it off. Casey picked up a pillow and tossed it at him. Just because you have an internal clock like the atomic clock at NIST doesn't mean we all do.
Mine worked for both of us. I woke you when you needed to get going. Just one more perk of sleeping with me.
Casey's lips were twitching as she headed toward the bathroom. You gave me enough perks last night. But for God's sake, Hutch, I'm the president of Forensic Instincts. We're interviewing a potential client. I need to set an example. Besides, I'm never late. She turned and gave him a warning look. Don't even think of following me into the shower.
I wouldn't dare.
Hutch admired her nakedness until she disappeared from view. But I will take a rain check, he called after her. In the meantime, Hero needs a walk. Rising and pulling on his sweats and sneakers, Hutch made eye contact with the handsome red bloodhound who'd raised his head the minute he heard his name. Come on, boy, Hutch said, giving him a hand signal, a signal that the former FBI human scent evidence dog instantly obeyed.
We've got time for a short walk, a quick breakfast, and then it's off to work for both of us. You and Casey have to join the team downstairs, and I've got to shower and haul ass to Federal Plaza.
With a sharp bark of understanding, Hero snapped into active mode. He followed Hutch out of the bedroom and the apartment, hurrying down the three flights of stairs to the front door.
Ah, you spent the night.
Ryan McKay, the team's techno genius, called out.
That explains our fearless leader's tardiness. It's 8:22. Your meeting's at 9, and fuck off,
Hutch said good-naturedly. He clipped Hero's leash onto his collar.
Hero needs to take care of business. See you in a few.
Hutch rolled his eyes as he and Hero pounded the pavement. Ryan, who was the antithesis of every stereotype assigned to an IT guy, was already preparing to needle Casey about this. Well, Casey would put him in his place in a New York minute. Poor Ryan still had trouble realizing that, no matter how tight a family they all were, Casey was Forensic Instinct's leader. 15 minutes later, Hutch and Hero returned to the upstairs apartment. Casey was already showered, dressed in a light blue silk blouse and white slacks, and munching on a protein bar as she scanned her notes. Hi, she said, glancing up. I've got to get downstairs. Can you feed Hero? Hutch nodded.
I'm willing to pay penance for turning off the alarm. I'll make Hero's food, shower while he's eating, and then deliver him to the first floor conference room.
Thanks. Just text me when you're coming down. One of us will step out and get him.
Right. Client confidentiality. Got it.
Hutch walked over, tilted Casey's chin up with his forefinger, and gave her a quick kiss.
I'll call you.
You'd better. She smiled, turning and descending the steps. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Oh, and be ready to cut Ryan off at the knees. He's in top form today.
Thanks for the warning. The FI team was gathered around the meeting room, sipping their coffee and chatting. The entire room was warm and inviting, from the soft cream walls to the clusters of buttery leather caramel tub chairs and matching sofas. The sideboard, with its Jura professional coffee station and built-in fridge and wine cooler, was a rich cherry wood, as was its matching coffee table. Casey walked in with a wave of her hand and headed for her usual tub chair, positioned directly across from the doorway, where she could watch the client from entry to departure and interpret his or her body language throughout the meeting. Good morning, Casey, greeted a computerized voice that seemed to emanate from every part of the room.
I've programmed the appropriate video and audio configuration for your meeting. It's available in the usual way.
Thank you, Yoda. Even though Casey was still in awe of Ryan's omniscient artificial intelligence system, she'd actively started thinking of it as a team member, one who was almost as human as the rest of them.
Will there be anything else? Yoda inquired as Casey put her folder and iPad Pro on the side table to the right of her chair. Otherwise, I'll be on standby.
Standby is fine, Yoda. Casey went over to make herself a cup of coffee. Hey, guys, she said, returning to her chair. We've got a few minutes to discuss the prospective client and a few minutes to redistribute responsibilities given our reduced staff. Casey was referring to the fact that her right-hand man, Mark Devereaux, former Navy SEAL and former FBI Behavioral Analysis Unit agent, was on his honeymoon. And Patrick Lynch, retired FBI special agent and security specialist, was with his wife, Adele, at their daughter's college graduation in Virginia. So the team was down to five, counting Hero. Both Mark and Patrick have said they're available if necessary, Casey continued. But it won't be necessary. We'll handle whatever's thrown at us. They deserve this time away.
Given their reasons for being away, I'd opt for Mark's scenario any day of the week,
Ryan said, leaning back in his chair and interlacing his fingers behind his head.
2 weeks in Aruba trumps 2 weeks in Virginia and D.C. Not that I believe for a minute that Mark and Madeline are spending much time on the beach.
One dark eyebrow rose.
Which reminds me, boss.
Don't even think of going there. Casey shot him down before he'd even gotten started.
You won't like my reaction.
Gotcha.
Ryan had the good sense to look sheepish. That was rarely the case. His ego matched his genius, at least when it came to his strategic skills and hacking abilities. But the rest? He gave little credence to his magnetic black Irish looks and well-muscled body, the former being a happenstance of birth, and the latter being a product of his gym rat tendencies. And frankly, though he had a healthy sexual appetite, women who stared longingly at him and looked ready to jump his bones irked the shit out of him. He preferred a challenge. At that thought, his gaze shifted to the willowy blonde sitting two chairs away. Talk about polar opposites. Claire Hedgley, or clairvoyant, as Ryan called her just to piss her off, was his 180. He was all about facts and strategic thinking. She was all about auras and insights and whatever the hell claircognizance or psychics, or whatever you called them, used as their core database. He couldn't argue with Claire's success ratio, not that that made him a believer. What he also couldn't argue with was the way she fired him up, on all fronts, in a way that no one ever had. It was more than a little unsettling. The object of his thoughts spoke up.
If what Brianna Mullen said on the phone is true, then this is a dangerous, predatory situation.
Claire tucked a wisp of blonde hair behind her ear, looking at Casey and opening the dialogue about their potential client.
I realize that stalking is far from uncommon, but what she's describing is dark and obsessive, with the potential for physical harm.
Casey nodded. Let's just remember that we don't have all the facts yet. Brianna gave us only pieces of information.
That's because she was hysterical.
I know, but she didn't even give us the name of her stalker. Does she know him? It sure sounded like she did. Is he an ex? A grad school classmate? Or is he a stranger? I want to hear her full story in person.
Casey took a sip of coffee.
That's the only way we can make a judgment about whether or not she's reading the situation clearly and how serious the risks are.
Can I stay for the whole meeting? Emma Sterling interrupted.
As always, Emma's enthusiasm made Casey smile. At 22, Emma was the team's newest and youngest member.
But what she lacked in years, she made up for in life experience. She'd been orphaned when she was young and had been in and out of foster care for years, often living on the streets. She'd survived because she'd used her cunning mind, together with the fact that she looked like an innocent Alice in Wonderland, to hone her pickpocketing skills until she rivaled the Artful Dodger. That life had grown old. She'd joined FI, reformed and eager, and her street smarts had already proved her an invaluable team member. Not to mention, she had guts. She'd been instrumental in solving FI's last case, putting her own life at risk to do it. Emma had more than proven her loyalty. She'd joined FI as the receptionist, but she'd turned into so much more. "Of course you're staying," Casey replied. "Just do your thing out front when the doorbell rings, and then join Ms. Mullen when you show her in."
"Cool,"
Emma grinned, immensely pleased with Casey's response. "As long as I'm part of the investigative team, I don't mind getting coffee, managing schedules, and answering telephones and doors."
"Nice to know, since that's what you were hired to do,"
Ryan said with teasing sarcasm. He had a lot of respect for Emma. The kid was a firecracker.
"I got a promotion, remember?" she shot back.
"Would you let us forget?" Now Claire was laughing. Casey met Emma's gaze.
"Correction. You didn't get a promotion. You earned one. We're proud of you. Now, do as good a job on this case as you did on the last one, without scaring us to death this time."
"Will do," Emma said, a shadow of memory crossing her face. But just as quickly, it was gone. That nightmare was over. She was healing with time and the support of her teammates. Casey glanced around. "We all got electronic copies of Brianna Mullen's deep bio, courtesy of Ryan. Questions?" Claire, Ryan, and Emma shook their heads. "This is comprehensive, as always." Casey scanned the documents on her iPad Pro, opening each one using the Box app. She'd already read them through three times. Ryan turned up information that few others could, not unless they knew how and where to look and were willing to go the route of the less-than-legal. First came the easy stuff. Brianna Mullen, age 27, height 5'7", weight 130 pounds, race African-American. Background, grew up on Manhattan's Upper West Side. Current living arrangements, a studio apartment on Waverly Place near Washington Square Park. Note, for past 3 days, has been staying with Lena Brando, her best friend, at her one-bedroom apartment on West 8th Street. Occupation, full-time graduate student at NYU Stern Business School, studying for her MBA in marketing. GPA 4.0. Current employment. During school year, works 20 hours a week at the Starbucks on 4th Street, about a block away from Stern Business School. Currently, summer months, working full-time at Zollmer Advertising, Inc. See next section, prior employment. Prior employment, 2011 to 2016, full-time. Zollmer Advertising, Inc., Madison Avenue, New York. Jobs held. Media associate, 2013 to 2016. Junior media associate, 2011 to 2013. Focusing on clients' digital, mobile, and social media marketing programs. Then, after a list of Brianna's online and social accounts, came the more probing stuff. Personal life, dated infrequently and discerningly, studied religiously, had a small nucleus of close friends, list appended as Schedule A, all of whom helped her start an anonymous GoFundMe page for female stalking victims. A portion of the donations helped her pay Forensic Instinct's fee. No arrests, no drinking, no drugs, no falling out with family. Mother, a pediatrician, father, an investment banker, both affluent enough and willing enough to pay for Brianna's tuition and a good chunk of her living costs. The rest, Brianna paid, including all personal expenses. Actions taken, restalking threat. 3 visits to the NYPD 6th Precinct to report incidents. None of the attempts yielded any results other than 3 filed complaints. She's scared enough to be staying with her best friend rather than at her own place, Casey noted aloud. Also, given the support she's getting on her GoFundMe page, it's clear that, while the police might not believe her, her friends do. That speaks to her character and her social circle. Or, if the stalker is someone they know, is lack of character, or both. Claire nodded. She seems to be a fine young woman, a hard worker, with a supportive bunch of friends and family, and no known vices or offenses.
No unknown ones either,
Ryan responded with an emphatic glare.
Deep bio means deep bio. If she'd gotten drunk and thrown up even once, that data would be in those searches.
Of course it would, Claire rolled her eyes. My apologies, Mr. Peabody. Ryan's glare disappeared, replaced by a huge grin.
The ultimate genius, straight from Rocky and Bullwinkle. Great analogy. Thanks for the compliment.
I didn't mean it as one.
True. In that case, the idea of accepting your apology hangs in the balance.
My heart breaks. Casey was about to intervene when the thermal and proximity sensors registered a heat source at the front door. Ms. Brianna Mullen has arrived, Yoda announced. Body temperature elevated, respiration rate high, no weapons detected.
I'm on my way, Yoda.
Emma sprang to her feet and hurried down the hall. She returned a minute later with their client at her side and Hero at her heels. 2. Brianna Mullen was a striking young woman with high cheekbones, a long mane of curly black hair, and wide, dark eyes. Beneath those dark eyes were even darker circles, and inside their depths was sheer terror. So much for her misreading the threat. This girl was genuinely traumatized.
Hi, Ms. Mullen, or may I call you Brianna?
Casey rose and extended her hand. I'm Casey Woods, president of Forensic Instincts.
Yes, call me Brianna, the girl said in a quiet voice, shaking Casey's proffered hand. It's such a relief to meet you.
Casey introduced the rest of the team and then gestured toward the chair they reserved for clients.
Have a seat. Can we get you anything? Coffee, tea, water?
No, thank you.
Brianna sat down. She crossed her legs, rigidly, so as to still their trembling, and placed tightly interlaced fingers in her lap. Leaning forward before retaking her seat, Casey handed Brianna some paperwork. That's our contract. Please take your time and review it before you sign. As if on autopilot, Brianna took the papers, barely scanning them before placing them on the floor beside her purse.
They're fine. Do I pay you now?
First, let's talk. Do we have your permission to videotape this meeting? If we don't come to a mutual agreement today, we'll delete the recording, and it will be wiped from our database. Alarm flashed across Brianna's face.
You have to take my case. I have nowhere else to go. Please, she begged. I'm being stalked by a psycho who's taking steps toward hurting me. Or worse, I'm not paranoid, she added, gazing around the room with the realization that she sounded as if she were exactly that. I don't have many hard facts, but I do have some, along with strong feelings and instincts.
She turned her gaze to Claire.
I heard that you're a psychic. That has to mean that you trust in things you just know but can't prove. I'm appealing to that now. Please don't turn me down.
A flash of compassion crossed Claire's face. She hated that Forensic Instincts had become so successful that they'd captured the media's attention. Less anonymity, more revelations. Much had been made about her claircognizance, the metaphysical sense of clear knowing, although she'd stayed as far out of the limelight as possible. Still, her gift was publicized enough for potential clients to be aware of it and to seize the feeling of hope it provided. That part sucked. But right now, her every instinct was screaming that Brienne...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?